cash, every movie costs $2,184.
Hello and welcome to Backtracks the Music. My name is Corey Morzette, joined as always from my podcasting brother from another mother, fluent in polyspeak, the one and only John Mariano. How are you doing tonight, John?
No reason to juice.
I tell you, he could teach a class on it. The guy knows his stuff. Also joining us tonight is our good buddy from way up here in the Great White North, everybody's second favorite host of the Sean Geek and Fast Red podcast, Sean McGinnity. How you doing, awesome. Sean?
I'm doing great. That is actually a very apt telling of our show for sure.
So tell us a little bit about the Sean Geek and Fast Red podcast while we got you here.
Well, I am the creator, the host of that show, but I'm also the third most popular person on that show. Karen's number one, and then Fast Fret, my brother, is number two. And whenever we have a guest on the show, that puts me down to four or five.
Well, depending on the guest. You had one at one point who did a few shows that is way, way down there. We won't mention his name, but he's on this call. All right. And Sean very nicely reached out and said, hey, I'm listening to this theme music thing you and John are doing. One of the five. Thank you for that. Yeah. And he said, amazing. And he just, hey, I got a ton of movies and music I'd like to talk about. And you pitched a really interesting one for us here tonight. Maybe tell us all about it.
Well, this movie was kind of important to me to introduce me like to some music, but also to this style of movie that came out during that era. It was kind of the first one that hit me and then led me down a rabbit hole of similar theme movies with great soundtracks. And it wasn't the movie that broke me for soundtracks, like for really great soundtracks, but it was one of the first. So, and also it was an introduction to Brendan Fraser, which, you know, I the guy's amazing.
Well, and this is one of his first early roles. I think he'd done School Ties before this and kind of considered himself a thespian. And then he got the script for Encino Man, and he's like, I don't want to do this. What, caveman? What the hell? But I tell you what, once he took on the role, he really took on the role and really, really invested in it. Unlike maybe another actor in the movie that we're going to talk about. But before we get into all that, John, maybe tell us a little bit about your experience with Encino Man.
I remember when this movie came out, I was stoked. Like, I was a really big Pauly Shore fan and was really happy that he was getting into the movies. A huge Sean Astin fan, you know, happy to see him back on film doing stuff post Goonies. And you know, if you watch the trailer, Brendan Fraser just eats the scenery. It was the first time I had ever seen him. But I was really excited to see the movie. Having rewatched the movie, I realize why I don't revisit it that much. And it has nothing to do with two out of the three actors I just mentioned. Actually, it has nothing to do with the actors, but how one of the characters in particular is written. Before we even get into anything, let's talk about Dave for a minute. Okay?
Because David
is in the wrong movie. Okay? He should not be an Encino Man. This little stalker who has wet dreams of going to the prom and going with a girl who wants nothing to do with him and won't give him the time of day needs to hang out with Emilio Estevez from St. Elmo's Fire because he is a trash human being, right? And they took one of the most likable actors in movie history and just turned him into absolute trash in this movie. And it was sad for me to watch. I mean, that was kind of my hot take on the movie. It was like, Oh, it's the minute Dave started talking. I'm like, oh, I don't like you. You're like, if one of the characters in Mallrats like was unlikable, like if TS was just completely trash and like stalking his ex-girlfriend, like something weird,
like you're saying on the alternate casting of Mallrats, how it would have just possibly destroyed the movie. I think
And I don't think it's Sean Astin that destroys this movie. I think it's the writing of I think it's like just Dave's motives destroy this movie for me. Right, like Pauly Shore isn't full-on Pauly in this movie.
No,
I didn't get enough Paulie. That's kind of what I loved about Son-in-Law, is that I get all the Paulie I want. This it's a little bit more dribs and drabs and pieces. But when I get him, I love him because his character is so endearing.
Yeah.
Now, interesting, you mentioned Pauly Shore. Sean and I are both Canadian. We didn't get MTV, which Pauly Shore was a staple on MTV. We got Much Music. Do you remember seeing a lot of Pauly Shore before this movie came out, Sean?
No, none at all.
Yeah.
He wasn't popular up here.
No, and still isn't. But we didn't have that base going into Encino Man like John did.
So Pauly was kind of the year-round spring break vibe on MTV, right? And he was the weasel, and he was fun, and he was party, and he was everything that you wanted that late 80s, early 90s era to feel like in a human being.
So how popular was he, though? Was he like uber popular, and that's what got him in the movie?
Yeah, like among teens, he was, I don't want to call him like Carson Daly or whatever, but he was probably along the lines of like a Tom Green, right? Like when Tom Green got big.
Okay.
Right. Like among American teens, like if you could take those kind of personalities, like think about like when Sacha Baron Cohen really hit with Dolly G, right? Yeah. When Tom Green really hit with the Tom Green Show, right? And there might be slight variations in the level of popularity, but he was like that kind of niche figure, but among teens. And teens, because MTV was everything. Everybody was watching videos. Like, you would put anything on MTV. You put Beavis and Butthead on MTV. It was huge, right? And
oh, yeah.
They had to carry videos on that show to justify that it was on MTV. But anything that MTV touched was gold. And Pauly was part of it. And Pauly's part of what I think at the time took MTV to yet another level. Right.
Wow.
Which I think is probably a fair statement. Because he gave them a mascot.
You know? You know what? He's very mascot-y. I can see that.
He's the Ed the Sock of MTV. Sean, look at that reference, though. Yeah. So a little piece of trivia to that point. The filmmakers originally wanted Pauly Shore to play Link, but Pauly Shore realized Link doesn't really talk. And so he went to Jeffrey Katzenberg, who was the chairman at Disney. And it was Katzenberg who wanted to do a movie with Pauly Shore because he was huge at the time. So they made the writers go back and make him one of the teen characters, which Pauly Shore obviously wasn't a teenager. Not even close, unless he'd been held back for a decade.
Neither was Sean Astin or Brent Fraser.
Yeah.
Wait, but in fairness, this was a time when Beverly Hills 902 was 1.0 was on TV with a bunch of 30-year-olds playing high school kids.
That's
like
right.
We widely accepted Pauly Shore as a teenager back then.
Good point. Maybe before we get into it, Sean, very briefly, I'm sure you could tell from the title of the movie, but give us a little bit of the plot of Encino Man.
The plot is basically about, am I allowed to swear on this show, or is this?
Absolutely.
You can fucking swear. fucking swear, Sean.
So it's about an asshat named Dave who's trying everything he can to get the girl of his dreams, and he's plotting this big scheme. But amidst the plotting of his scheme, they unearth a Neanderthal man, and he decides to ride the coattails of somebody else instead of doing the job himself and try to become popular using Encino Man.
Yes, the big thing at the beginning of the movie, he's going to dig a swimming pool. So yes, after the prom, he'd have this big, massive pool party. Because that's what you do. You just go in your backyard, you dig a hole, and you have a pool. And that's what happens at the movie.
You just put water into the hole. Like, you don't need to.
You don't need a liner or filtration system or anything. No.
No.
You just need
a good rain.
I just want to be clear, though. Like, just because this movie suffers from the male gaze, that's not my issue with the movie, right? Like, I can compare this movie unfavorably to like a License to Drive with the Corys, right? Where Mercedes is basically in the trunk of their car for the duration of the movie. And that movie is leagues better because those characters are way more likable than Dave.
Yeah.
That's true. But
I was just going to say it's funny how, you know, Dave you know, does he even get lead credit, Sean Astin?
Oh, that's a good question. I thought he did. No, but Brendan, like, Fraser gets lead credit.
Interesting. They might have changed that after one star eclipsed the other, I guess, maybe. I don't know. Maybe. But I don't like, he should be likable. He should be, you know, the guy that's bullied in high school. Like, we should be able to identify more with him. But I identify more with Pauly Shore in this film.
I mean, in fairness, he is bullied in high school. He's yeah. bullied by Michael DeLuise, who I like infinitely more. His character, I like. I was happy his character was bullying Dave for so many. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Shush.
Yes.
It was so.
He's a good bully in this film, though.
Oh, he's a very good bully.
Yeah.
I was getting flashbacks. I believe he was one of the DeLuises. He and Peter, I think, were both on 21 Jump Street.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
His brother was one of the regulars. I don't remember. Yeah.
Well, no. I think Michael came on in later seasons.
Okay.
And being a huge Dom DeLuise fan, anytime a DeLuise shows up, I cheer.
Wait. Is he related to Dom?
His son.
No way.
Way.
You just blew my mind. I had no idea. Oh, well, wow, that's so cool.
Welcome to the show where you learn stuff.
Nice. Don't need no Eric Senich on this one.
That's right. You want a DeLuise expert. He's sitting right there, Mr. John Mariano.
DeLuise was just, he was genius, man. That guy was so cool.
It's funny, I was telling these boys before we hit record that my daughter and I, we watched the movie Christine, John Carpenter's Christine, before we watched Encino Man on the rewatch. And there was a bully in that movie, too. But he's definitely not as likable as DeLuise was in Encino Man.
I think one of the issues is, you know, other than Weird Science, this has, like, the most likable bully in movie history. Right? And in Weird Science, I'm talking about both Robert Downey Jr. and his buddy and Chet all being bullies that I like in that movie.
To the point where Michael DeLuise gets up there, he has the evidence that Link is a caveman in these Polaroids, and just for some reason thinks, I'm going to interrupt prom and get on the mic and tell people he's a caveman, and then they cheer and he goes, no!
But as an actor, as a comedic actor, I guess, he pulls it off. He's like, but he's a caveman. And he just sells it so well.
That's the big dramatic moment in the film. The third act spike is right there when he's a caveman.
Yeah.
Don't care. Let's dance.
His pause for reaction on that line is such a stroke of brilliance.
Yeah.
And then he gets thrown into the snack table, and then Pauly Shore gets to run up and yell, shush. And everybody cheers, and it's a great moment. But actually, speaking about the prom scene, that's the song we're covering here tonight.
That's right.
We'll throw it back to Sean. Tell us a little bit about why you picked Feed the Monkey by Infectious Grooves.
Well, at this point, when we were seeing songs in films, there was kind of a predominance for it to be a little bit poppier, or a little bit, I don't know, Madonna-ish or something like that. It was usually like kind of like had a bit of a pop flavor. And then in this film, in a key scene in the film, really, we're getting Mike, I'm probably going to pronounce his last name wrong, but Mike Muir from Suicidal Tendencies, mm-hmm. in his side project. And they're actually in the movie. And for me, as a nerd of indie music, just loving indie music, seeing a band that I still consider independent, and they're actually in a key scene in the film, and they're actually in the film. It's not just their song. They're actually there with their funk project, which this is the current Metallica bass player was in this band. It blew my mind that this little band that I liked had kind of scored the big film soundtrack. It was huge for me.
Kind of a funk metal supergroup. You mentioned Mike Muir, I thought it was, from Suicidal Tendencies.
Yep.
Dean Pleasance, Adam Siegel of Excel, a band I don't know. Stephen Perkins of Jane's Addiction on drums. And then, Robert Trujillo of Suicidal Tendencies, now currently the bass player for Metallica, only the biggest heavy metal band in the world. So,
Okay, and they're great.
Oh, yeah.
I might have some breaking news.
Uh-oh.
So I was just, you know, we fact check a little bit while we go on the show.
Uh-oh.
And, oh, no, you're going to be very happy. So Pauly Shore, as late as the year 2020, was being interviewed and asked if he and Brendan Fraser are still friends.
Oh, I'd be curious to know what that is.
And he said, not only are we still friends, but we both would very much like to revisit 1992's Encino Man at some point. And what? guys, I'm pretty sure in a couple of weeks, this movie's going to feature two Academy Award winners.
You think they get Ki-Hoon Kwan back for the... Because I heard about Encino Man being revisited as a Disney Plus series with all three of the leads.
Not only do I think that they get Ki back, the questions, because I don't know how close you were watching this movie, will they get Rose McGowan and Robin Tooney back?
Rose McGowan's very first on-screen appearance was in Encino Man. Yes.
Was it? I was wondering. Because... Yeah, I remember seeing her and going, wow.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's Rose McGowan, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think she would come back so much, but if they could get Sean Astin and Brendan and two Academy Award winners along with Pauly Shore, that'd be something.
Oh, I thought you meant Pauly Shore was the Academy Award winner. Sorry, you confused me there.
Oh no.
He was nominated for Razzies. The Army Now.
Yep.
He's won a few Razzies. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he has.
All due respect to Mr. Shore. I'm a huge Pauly Shore fan. I think he should get an honorary Oscar if they come out with an Encino Man TV series.
Oh my God. You know, the thing is too, with him, the kind of the frustrating thing is, cause he did a bunch of movies, right? Shore was just riding the wave, doing really well for himself. And then at one point it's like, everyone turned on him, and then he was kind of the butt of every joke.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that was really fair. Like, I don't think he did anything wrong.
No, people got sick of the shtick.
Right. It was too one note for too long of a period of time, and people got sick of it.
Same thing happened to Andrew Dice Clay, right? He was the biggest thing. Oh, he did Ford Fairline. Yeah. He was selling out everywhere, and then everyone's like, we're sick of the shtick, and away he went.
I will say I think the distinct difference between those two individuals, though,
obviously, yeah,
is that Pauly never offended anyone with his humor, right? Like he was
stoner dude. He wasn't attacking any groups.
He was a stoner dude who liked some fresh nugs. He objectified women. That was like his big thing, but he never really objectified them in like a leering, creepy way.
No.
I don't know. When DeLuise was checking out his girlfriend's cheeks, he was making some odd noises. He also liked this. He also liked stealing from the India proprietors of the what was that convenience store called? There was a 7 on it, but it was like something Mart, and there was a number 7. Yeah. I'm like, why is the 7 there? Just to invoke 7-Eleven? Like, get it. It's a quickie Mart. It's fine.
Well, no, because here in the States, 7-Eleven is pretty huge. I don't know. You guys have some importance. I figure.
No, it was huge. Except on the east coast in the east part of Canada, we didn't have 7-Elevens. We actually had something different. It was based on, oh my God, not P.P. Longstocking. Oh my God, Anne of Green Gables. So there was something called Green Gables. They didn't have any 7-Elevens. It was just Green Gables.
I don't know if we're ever going to talk about 7-Eleven again on the show. And because we are, I do have to bring up to a convenience store I went to, a chain in Colorado one time called the Come and Go.
Ejaculate and evacuate. Yep.
Yeah. K-U-M and go. And I had my favorite mug was from there.
Oh my God.
I live right by the American border. So we would drive 15 minutes. We did Plentywood, Montana. And they had a come and go, and we called it the ejaculate and evacuate.
Oh my God. I can't believe that's even real.
Yeah, K-U-M and go. Yeah.
I want
God
go
bless
get,
America.
I want to go get another mug and then go drive to Intercourse, Pennsylvania and take a sip.
You can come up to Climax, Saskatchewan too.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
But we digress. Maybe we should get back to the movie, huh? You guys want to listen to a little Infectious Grooves?
Yes.
All right, let's do it. This is from 1992's Encino Man. This is Infectious Grooves and Feed the Monkey. Now, it's at this point that Link and Pauly Shore start doing their choreographed dance that they had been rehearsing for months, we assume. They just kind of break it out. And then Dave says, watch this, to the girl he's been stalking, and jumps in with the same dance, even though he's been a miserable son of a bitch for the entire movie and, after this point.
And even though he refused to dance before when they're in that bar.
That's right.
Oh, I don't dance. I don't dance.
I just don't like to dance.
And the moves they were doing was from when Link was watching MTV and they're watching this video. I don't know what that video was. I can't remember what that song was, but it was the dance in that, and that's when he kind of connected with his inner whatever dancer, I guess.
John, what'd you think of the opening salvo there?
Yeah, I gotta say, you know, the soundtrack hit in 1992 and it's kind of a mess. Like the selections of music are all over the place.
Yep.
And I think that the hair metal in it, as much as I love the songs, I was really happy to hear a bunch of them, including the hair metal, including Queen, at this point in time, I think was a mistake, because I think it killed this soundtrack at the door, because everybody was moving more towards this type of indie rock. I think if the soundtrack sounded more like this,
yes,
this soundtrack would have cooked.
I agree.
There's still some good stuff on here, though. The big single for me, because I was still in a hair metal in 92, was Vince Neil's first solo effort after either quitting or getting fired from Motley Crue. You're Invited, But Your Friend Can't Come.
Yeah.
Played during the ice skating hockey scene.
I'm not trashing that at all. Like, I love the hair metal on this, right? I love that song. But at this point in 1992 in America, right, this was a dying breed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it kind of all over
1992.
The place.
Yeah, that was right in the middle. Yeah, that was kind of a weird pick. I didn't realize it was that old a movie.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to point out is like, I'm pretty sure I got the year right. Let me just.
No, it's correct. I get it up here.
Yeah,
you get everything from like Crystal Waters to Edgar Winter Group in Frankenstein and the Smithereens doing Woolly Bully to like Steve Vai and then Tone Loc. So it really kind of hits every genre.
Right. And I think because it hit every genre and didn't lean it like this should have been the vibe of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And this soundtrack would be an all time classic.
I agree.
Yeah. She likes to beat the monkey. She likes to beat the monkey. She likes to beat the monkey. She likes the monkey. Well, gather around and let me tell you all the story about a boy and his monkey. All right, so lyrically so far, we get that she likes to feed the monkey. People should gather around and hear this story about a boy and his monkey, just to catch everybody up.
Yeah.
But from a dance groove point of view, and there were a lot of movies doing this in this era or slightly after this era, I'm reminded of when PCU with Jeremy Piven does a whole P-Funk. You know, they got George Clinton and the Parliament Funkadelic. On that soundtrack. Now this is not P-Funk at all, right? This is kind of, you know, it is what it is, but it's a fun dance groove for them to do this weird little number they do. Dave should not have been dancing in the sequence, though.
Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah, they're trying to redeem a character who didn't deserve redemption at this point in the film.
And why does she pick him at that part of the movie? He hasn't done anything to redeem himself, has he? Really?
No, not at all. Really? And you know, can you ask Link if he'll go to the prom with me? And then he shows up at the prom and didn't do anything there. That was Link who like knocked out DeLuise, threw him through the punch bowl.
I can tell you this is the reason why. She basically has four choices in the movie, right? And one of them gets dumped into a table, right?
Yeah.
One of them she discovers is a caveman, probably not into that. The other one is Pauly Shore. So she's kind of like,
I Paul guess Shore's 35. I think he's too old for me.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Like that dude's still in high school. This is like his like 20th time going to 12th grade right now. I got it. Somebody else I got to pick.
Hey, you know what? Academy Award winner Ki Huynh Kwon is there from the chess club. Yeah. Right? He's a good option.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but he's not interested in anybody who can't play chess.
Okay. What about those two rapper guys?
Yeah, they were just by the lockers, just chilling, just dancing, having fun. Link would come dance with them a bit, and that was the end of their story.
So I have a question. Out of all these groups that you see in the movie, Corey, who did you hang out with?
Well, it definitely wasn't the jocks. It wasn't the chess club. We didn't have a chess club. Oh, man. I didn't really hang out with anybody. I hang around with the drunks. I didn't see any drunks in this movie, though.
No. Well, there was at that bar, but they were.
I was hanging out at that bar, yeah, but there was no. I was at the Come and Go in Plentywood, Montana.
That, I was going to say, was that in Kamsack, Saskatchewan? Or
No, I was down in Minton, Saskatchewan, actually. Spending most of my time skipping school, going to Plentywood, Montana. And getting American girls to do fun things for a six-pack of Canadian beer. But that's a story for a different podcast.
I didn't hang out with Paulie Shore, but I probably was Dave in my high school.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. I was just walking up to girls and be like, hey, you want to go to prom? No. All right, cool.
I'm digging a giant hole in my backyard. You want to come see it?
Yeah. Yeah. What are you, building a pool? No. I'm just digging a hole.
Just digging a hole. Yeah. If it fills with water, so be it.
That Stephen Perkins on the drums is so tight.
I know, right?
God. It may seem straightforward that the intro to the song and then the intro to the second verse there, but it ain't. I've actually tried to play this and I would always screw it up. He's so good, and then just Trujillo on, or I can't pronounce names, but the bass player Robert, mm-hmm. He's like just the two of them together. Like I want to see that combo somewhere else.
I can listen to that all day. That bass line and those drums, like that's the entire song for me. Corey was trying to pick on the lyrics before. I don't even fucking hear the lyrics at this stage of the game.
What do you mean picking on the lyrics? This is brilliant. Can we pet your monkey? Hey ho, you see the monkey? Did you know you made my monkey hungry? I didn't really know how it gets so hungry. I'd like to know, would you feed the monkey? Like, what's wrong with that?
This is up for breakfast territory here. Maybe a little bit better, though.
Yo, this metaphor way better than anything in Up for Breakfast. Yes. This one at least makes sense.
Yes, exactly.
I'm still confused by she puts the cream in my coffee. What is she putting in your coffee? Don't
get it.
Whatever it is, don't drink it. It's not sanitary.
No. Did you know you made my monkey hungry? I didn't really know how you get so hungry. I'd like to know. Would you be my monkey? Well, you bet my monkey, cause my monkey don't bite. But when you bet my monkey, he get funky all night. My monkey ain't no ordinary orangutan, cause my monkey likes to do the wild thing.
All right, so lyrically again, we got, you can pet my monkey, because my monkey don't bite, but when you pet my monkey, he get funky all night. My monkey ain't no ordinary orangutan, because my monkey likes to do the wild thing. This would work as a dramatic reading. Like, just get up there, like, you know, open mic night at your local coffee shop. And
Or you get Fast Frit to read it out, and it suddenly becomes a love thing.
That's right. We put a nice love groove, little portal groove behind it. Oh, yeah. So you like to feed the monkey?
So look, you can pick on the lyrics all you want. At one point during this movie, Stoney, played by Paulie Shore, is talking to Dave's dad and says, and I quote, if you're edged because I'm wheezing all your grindage, mm-hmm. just chill. Because if I had the whole Brady Bunch thing happening at my pad, I'd go grind over there So don't tax my gig so hardcore, Cruster. Like, that's an actual quote from this movie.
Yes.
And, I remember. And I was the dad's response was what? It was,
I don't understand a word you said. He's so quotable. Like, that's one of the quotables. And it's interesting, too, because Pauly Shore is actually showing some range here, because you see him enter. Obviously, there's something going on at home with him and his mom. And he's kind of a sad character. And even though he's playing kind of playing it for laughs, he still has some serious chops in there. You know, like he's out acting Sean Astin, and it's Pauly Shore. Like, I don't know.
There's the sequel bait prequel we needed, with Stoney's backstory coming from an abusive childhood.
Yeah.
That made him, you know, go to high school for 30 years and speak the way he does.
Yeah.
I an A24 film.
Pauly, you know, broke through playing a character. I don't think he gets the credit he deserves. He grew up at the Comedy Store. There's no way that doesn't rub off on you as a kid around all that talent.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he was saying, like, he had babysitters, and his babysitters were, you know, I don't know specifically who, but, like, I don't know, Carlin would look after him or something, or crazy stuff like that. Like, all those... Right. I think all the classics, like Richard Pryor and all those, he knew all those guys.
Well, yeah, he was a kid. I mean, his mom was responsible for who was going to go on Carson.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like we always talk about, like, Carson being the proving ground for comedians getting TV shows or whatever. Yep. Pauly Shore's mom was the gatekeeper to get on Carson. Right. So huge. Like, let's not understate this man's, you know, stock in comedy, right? And even now he's running the store now.
Oh, is he running the store?
Yeah, he's running the store now. Nice. It's Pauly's store, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So if I'm wrong, tweet at me. Tell me I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm right. My monkey don't scratch, my monkey don't bite, my monkey don't swing no tree. My monkey don't hit, my monkey don't cool, my monkey be swinging me. My monkey don't free, my monkey don't pet, my monkey don't win no cake. But you can tell what my monkey want to eat, cause it turned into a big ol' way.
That wasn't in the song, that was John going, oh, oh, oh.
that's what I thought. I saw his lips moving there.
Would it be too much to ask this band to reunite, but I want Steven Tyler to sing it? And maybe it's because we do the Aerosmith podcast, but I really think he, you know, Scott, our buddy Scott Haskin gets on Steven Tyler's case sometimes for chewing the scenery on an Aerosmith song. I think that he would thrive on a song like this.
Well, that'd be interesting. I know Jim Martin from Faith No More did a gig with Infectious Grooves at one point.
That's cool.
Dave Kushner from Slash's spinoff band there.
Slash's Snake Pit?
No. Velvet Revolver. Jesus, that took too long.
Well, it looks like they put out something in 2020, an EP in 2020.
Take You on a Ride, yeah, Uncharted.
That's cool. I'm going to have to go check that out.
Officially, the last lineup here is listed as 93 to 2000. Mike Muir, Robert Trujillo, Josh Paul, Dean Pleasance again, Adam Siegel, and Brooks Wackerman on the drums. Josh Fries did some drumming for him back in 92, 93.
Huh.
So, yeah, we're long overdue, I think, for an Infectious Groove reunion.
You know, I think people kind of get tired with, like, the Chili Peppers, and this is kind of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because Chili Peppers have gone a little less funky, and they're going to just, I don't know, mainstream is the right word, but they're more ballady or serendipitous or melancholic kind of nowadays, you know?
Yeah. They should do more songs about monkeys.
Yeah.
But you can tell me what my monkey want to eat, because it turned into a big old ape. What does that mean? Looking for a lyrical interpretation. The entire verse was, my monkey don't scratch, my monkey don't bite, my monkey don't swing no tree, my monkey don't hit, my monkey don't drool, my monkey be swing with me, my monkey don't freak, my monkey don't trip, my monkey don't wear no cape. You can tell what my monkey want to eat, because it turned into a big old ape.
It means his penis gets engorged.
Oh my, is this a penis analogy?
100%.
Oh, I thought he was literally singing about a monkey. I thought it was like Wynonna's Big Brown Beaver from Primus. That's literally just a song about a beaver.
Yeah.
No. This unironically is about a wiener.
Or is this unironically telling us what Brendan Fraser is going to do next for a film?
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
The Jungle. I don't know.
Oh, George of the Jungle next for Brendan Fraser?
It was one of the next ones. Maybe not immediately next, but it was one of the next ones.
No, because Brendan Fraser does some tremendous acting in the 90s as well. Like he has that. What was that movie with Ben Affleck and Matt Damon? School Ties.
Yeah, that was before this one, I believe.
It was before this, right?
School Ties is amazing.
Right. Like he has some tremendous. He has the one with Joe Pesci about Harvard. He has some really good stuff in the 90s.
Yeah.
So, among that, then he has this. He has George of the Jungle. Like he knew how to get the most bang for his buck, and do take the one for them, one for me thing literally.
Yeah, but he didn't phone it in though either, because like in this film too, like. This movie shouldn't be good in any way, shape, or form, but it's got moments of brilliance, and it's his acting. Like there's the moments where they're in the museum, and he kind of clues into his situation, and then he's there trying to make the fire, and he's crying, and just he's so real in this movie. Like, he just committed to the role, and it's a stupid role, but he put some power behind it, and. It's not a
stupid role. Like it's a man out of time role. It's written kind of stupidly.
Yes.
but like the concept is very much like Captain America, right?
Very much so.
Yeah. And I need to correct myself right off the hop here. Encino Man and School Ties came out the same year. School Ties was actually in the fall, released in September, and Encino Man came out in May. So Encino Man was first.
Oh, okay.
But Brendan Fraser did reprise the role of Link in a couple of other movies. Do you guys know what those movies are?
No.
He has an uncredited cameo in Son-in-Law.
Yes, he does. And there's another one, Bedazzled, I want to say?
No, it's actually another Pauly Shore film, In the Army Now.
Oh.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Now, those are ones I haven't seen as often. Biodome's the one I'd probably seen the most outside of Encino Man.
In the Army Now used to be my favorite of the Pauly Shores, just because of David Alan Greer's performance. He's really good in that film.
I like Jury Duty.
Yeah,
I haven't seen that one in a while.
If you could take Jury Duty and My Cousin Vinny and watch them back to back, you're watching at least one good movie.
Maybe getting a tad repetitive. I don't know. Yeah. I get the impression she wants the monkey.
And what's this song about?
Penis.
It's 100% there now. Are you guys on board with me yet?
Well, I get it. Why is it 5 minutes and 4 seconds is maybe my question.
You know what? The version of this song I heard was like not this long, actually.
It must be
a radio edit of this one.
Maybe.
I literally thought the song was over when we were talking before.
Oh, I don't even know if we're halfway done yet.
before you started playing it again, I'm like, oh my God, it's still going.
I thought you started it again.
But it's funny, and the lyric thing kind of stopped at an ad here because it turned into a big old ape. I thought the song was not new. Then I scrolled down. Holy shit, there's like three more pages.
Into a big old ape.
No, you know what she wants? She wants the monkey. Well, yeah, this thing. Okay, let's keep going.
Yep. You know what she wants. You know what she wants.
I wanted to stop before it ended because we got a pretty long stretch there without stopping the song.
Did you notice the advertisements that were popping up on the lyrics during the song?
No. What were they?
It was a condom ad. So I think your analogy about the monkey being a penis is actually very accurate.
Now every site I go to is going to have nothing but penis ads because I'm listening to this song. Thanks, John.
Before we go ahead and finish the song, let me ask you guys, why is Dave so entitled to own Link in this movie? Like, Pauly Shore takes him to the theme park, and they go on the roller coaster, and they have a good time, and they have that great sequence where they're having fun together. And then they come home at night, and Dave just completely shits on them.
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
You were gone all day.
You were gone. It wasn't like you were gone all day, you left me home. It was like you took my toy that I'm going to try to use to get a prom date with.
It wasn't like, I was worried.
No. No, it wasn't.
You took my property.
You took my property, right, that I'm going to use to get a prom date with. Like, I still don't understand that logic. If I were standing next to Brendan Fraser, I don't think that's the way I'm going to try to get a date, especially Brendan Fraser, 1992 Brendan Fraser.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I'm pretty sure I'm going to stand next to him and the young lady I'm interested in is going to go home with him.
And she wanted to. She asked, can you ask Link if he'll take me to the prom? And he got all upset.
Because he's standing next to Brendan Fraser. Like, did you see Airheads? Airheads, it's Brendan Fraser's hanging out with Adam Sandler and Steve Buscemi, right? And like, I love those two guys, but they know, right, who the lead singer is of that band and why. He can have no voice at all. He's still your front man.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Amen. Yep.
Dave's a piece of shit.
And there was that Dave had that thing where he had the naked picture.
Yeah.
Like, when they were kids.
Yeah, look, we've been fucking naked creepy. Together. Yeah. Oh, my God.
We took a bath together or whatever the fuck he says to him. Like, I wanted to slap him and be like, dude.
I'm going to show people, like, almost saying, if you don't go to the prom with me, I'm going. You know those trolls? Remember they stole, like, Jennifer Lawrence's, like, naked pics and a whole bunch of celebrity naked pics, and they put them up on the air? Mm-hmm. Was that Dave?
I think
she still goes out with him at the end of the movie.
And we don't know why. Because what did he do? Yeah. He showed up and then he did a choreographed dance.
No, he showed up. That dance was not enticing. That dance done by Brendan Fraser is probably enticing people.
But
that dance done by anybody else, not enticing people.
No, he says, watch this. He does the dance badly, and then they make out.
Did Sean Astin really, like, want this movie?
No, it actually found a great piece of trivia here I want to read to you guys.
Okay, because this is not him.
No. So here, this is from IMDb, so take it with a grain of salt.
Okay.
Sean Astin did not want to make this film. He was sent the script, read it, and thought it was the biggest piece of shit he read in his life. Shortly after, Jeffrey Katzenberg personally called Sean asking for his commitment to the film. He was offered $150,000 plus $400,000 on the back end. Sean tried to respectfully decline and even asked if they were willing to listen to his own ideas to make the film better, but Katzenberg was only concerned with the money the film will make. After a while, they faxed him a revised script, which didn't change that much. He was told Brendan Fraser would be in it, who Sean was eager to work with, and that Pauly Shore would also be in it. Sean had never heard of Pauly. After watching tapes of Pauly's MTV stuff that Disney sent him, Sean got even more reluctant. Disney was relentless in getting Sean to do the film, so they upped his pay to $250,000, gave him complete creative control of his character, gave him a three-option deal, and gave him a short film to direct, which became Kangaroo Court.
Time out. Sean Astin had complete creative control of Dave.
According to this, yeah.
And that's what he went with?
I know.
I mean, Sean, all due respect, and I love you. I love you as Mikey in the Goonies. I love you as Samwise Gamgee. I love you as Bob in Stranger Things. Everything in between, right? I love you so much. I love your mom. My mom was a big fan of the Patty Duke Show. She made me a big fan of the Patty Duke Show. And I'm a big fan of your father, John Astin, from Adam's Family and from Night Court. That's how big of a fan I am of you.
Yeah.
How the fuck are you creatively in charge of Dave? And this is what you do, man. Like, I get you want to stretch your range, but you made him a dick.
So all this proves is that Sean Astin is a good actor and not a good writer.
Well, either that or just wanted to try something different and see if he could play unlikable. And he can. Wait, unlikable shouldn't have been the lead of the movie.
Yeah.
Right? Sean Astin should have been the Michael DeLuise character because Dave would have been perfect as that guy. You can't get bullied in your own movie and I cheer for the bully. Like that, it shouldn't work that way.
What was the alternate casting? I wonder if there's I guess they wanted him, right? But like, were there any who else could we see in this role who could have, I don't know, made it work better?
I don't think that's the problem. Like, I don't feel like I feel like the creative control might be the issue, right? Like, it's not that Sean Astin is unlikable. It's that Dave is unlikable. Yeah. And I slam the writers, but like, it's hard to slam. It's almost like, and I'll bring it into wrestling for a minute. When they gave Hulk Hogan and all those guys creative control over WCW, and the show became a shit show on Nitro because everybody was approving their own matches and everything. It's like, you can't go that far. Give him $800,000 on the back end, right?
Yeah,
or give him $500,000. Throw him an extra $100,000. Like, look, we're gonna hold on to creative control, but here's an extra $100,000 on the back end. The movie would have made more money if Dave was likable.
Yeah. Oh God, yeah. Because it wasn't a huge success. It was a small success. It wasn't a huge success. I think having a likable character would have made this movie a lot different.
Yeah, it was a $7 million budget and it made $40 million. So.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty nice success and probably shows why Pauly Shore starts getting all those movies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
But I also think that the amount of talent that's crammed into this movie, right? Like Rick Dukeman shows up as a teacher.
I hope you were going to bring him up.
God, I mean, when are we going to do the Burbs? That's what I want to know. Underrated comedian. Mm-hmm. And you know, he's there for a bit part, and I have no doubt in my mind Pauly Shore probably played into that casting a little bit.
You know, that would make sense.
That would make sense. Yeah.
You know, but you know, Rick Dugerman, I think shortly after this, does The Burbs, and shows up briefly. Robin Tooney is in it. She goes on to do The Craft. She goes on to do Empire Records. She does some great work throughout her career. A lot of people go on to do things, right? And Ki-Hoon, help me out with the name, Corey, because
I'm probably saying it wrong too, but I believe it was Ki-Hoon Kwon.
Yeah, Ki-Hoon Kwon, who I knew as Jonathan Kwon at the time, because of that's how he was billed back then, because Hollywood's, you know, reasons.
Hollywood, yeah.
Hollywood. But this ends up being his last movie, right? He works as a stunt coordinator for the rest of his career till this past year, right? Like they call him and like, hey, we want you to be in a movie. He has to go get an agent. I'm pretty sure he gets Chunk to be his agent because Chunk's an agent now.
Yep.
And it's such a wonderful and great story, and he's so easy to root for. But I've been waiting for a Short Round movie my entire life.
Oh God, that'd be so good.
It would be so dope to have him as Short Round, like in the later years post indie, going on Short Round adventures. Like, give me that.
You know damn well they're pitching him that Disney Plus series right now after the success of Everything Everywhere.
I don't want a Disney Plus series.
No,
I want a big screen practical action movie with sets. Real sets.
Oh, good luck.
Not in,
they even make screen. Real sets anymore.
And locations. I want them to go on location. And
be a global film.
Going
everywhere.
I want like Short Round to go to like Antarctica. Like give me a real adventure, right?
Well, then you better hope Christopher Nolan is a Short Round fan, because he's the only filmmaker I think left who's shooting on real sets with practical effects.
Damn straight.
Everybody else is in a volume. We could do this right in LA on a volume.
I have thoughts and opinions on the volume, and when we eventually cover Ant-Man Quantumania, we can discuss them in ad nauseum.
Oh Lord, we're not talking about that tonight. We're going to wrap this up pretty quick, but I just wanted to. I was only able to find one alternate casting, but it wasn't for the Dave role; it was for the Link role, and it's Ben Stiller, actually screen tested for Link, but dropped out due to scheduling conflicts. How would that have worked? It would have been interesting. It would have been a different character.
It wouldn't have been the same character at all.
It would have been more introspective and lower energy. It could have worked if they punched up Pauly Shore to give him more screen time and more to do. Because I could see Ben Stiller, especially 90s Ben Stiller with the Ben Stiller Show and things like that, really giving you... You know, with that character, you needed the soundtrack we pitched during the show, because Ben Stiller very much was that vibe.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Speaking of vibe, let's try and finish off this marathon infectious
groove. God, is that over yet?
No, there's more. All right, Feed the Monkey by Infectious Grooves. There we go, John. Okay, you seem to like that ending.
Yeah,
they put one more Feed the Monkey in there. I got very happy.
I was just hoping we're gonna get that ad pop up again at the same time, like right at the ending. I thought that would have been cool
for the good old ejaculate and evacuate. Plentywood, Montana, go get yourself a coffee mug and some really cheap Canadian cigarettes. John, anything else you want to talk about Encino Man before we call it a night here?
Oh, I think we've covered most of it. We've covered Fresh Nugs, Wheezing the Juice.
No Wheezing the Juice.
Oh, buddy.
Right? And like what about the famous, your cheese is old and moldy?
Where's the bathroom? Your cheese is old and moldy.
Yeah, where's the bathroom?
And maybe say, you're right.
Was anyone surprised that they don't say baño for bathroom?
What did they actually use?
Like sanitaire or something.
Sanatorio. Yeah, that's what they used. I was taking Spanish at the time. It was interesting. So I was like, hey, I know what he's saying.
I knew what he was saying, but I'm like, why go with the much longer word? Like baño.
It's funnier. And I knew what he was saying too, because they put the words on the screen right underneath. Yep. I got to read it. So it was really good. So what are the takeaways? Brendan Fraser and Ki-Hoon Kwan are delights. They should both be victorious come Oscar night. We're taping this before the Academy Awards on Sunday. Please. Yeah, hopefully they both win. Dave's a piece of shit, but we won't hold it against Sean Astin too much. But now that we found out he had creative control over his character, he's got to answer some questions.
Yeah. Are you going to get him on for next week? Or
hopefully. He'll be too busy taping the Encino Man sequel for Disney Plus.
I want to see that really bad now.
Apparently, all three have expressed different levels of interest in doing it. Now, after Brendan Fraser wins the Academy Award, I don't know if he'll be so keen, but we'll see. He's a pretty fun guy.
You know what? He's a team player. He would just do it just because he loves those people.
I think he would, honestly, having seen him in interviews, I would imagine he would do it just to work with Pauly Shore again. I do wonder, though, and I'm going to throw this out there. I want to put this out into the universe. Prior to the Oscars, Brendan Fraser gets to name his next franchise's next thing. If it isn't Airheads 2, we have failed as a society.
I'm still hoping for Dudley Do-Right 2. He was the perfect Mountie.
He was.
I was wondering why you were going there and not George of the Jungle. I'm like, oh, it's a fucking Mountie.
Yeah, of course. It's a Canadian. Canadian.
He was like our superhero, Dudley Do-Right.
Mm-hmm.
Until, you know, like Wolverine came along. And...
Yeah.
That would make sense.
We don't have the same culture, John. We had superheroes like Mr. Canoehead. Do you ever hear of him?
He sounds a little bit like Rocky or Bullwinkle.
No, Mr. Canoehead awesome. Was he was portaging his aluminum canoe through the woods, which is carrying it kind of on your shoulders, and he got it struck by lightning, and the canoe fused to his head, and he became the superhero known as Mr. Canoehead.
Mr. Canoehead,
yeah,
and he used to do boots to the head,
yeah.
Yeah. We have Chairface Chippendale down here. He's a super villain from The Tick that tries to carve his name into the moon with a laser. But he has an actual chair for a head.
I wonder if that is at all inspired by Mr. Canoehead. I don't know.
It might be the Tick. You know, shot to parody a lot of the cartoons and put some zany ideas out there. Not cartoons, but like superheroes. And I wouldn't be surprised if they took inspiration from Canada for that.
It might. Yeah, I could see it. I do love The Tick. The Tick is phenomenal.
If the creators of The Tick know of an obscure 80s Canadian sketch comedy show called Four on the Floor, which is who did Mr. Canoehead, I would be incredibly impressed. I'm impressed Sean knows Mr. Canoehead.
I used to listen to Four on the Floor every week. I think it was on Sundays back home in New Brunswick. We used to listen to it on the radio.
Before Kids in the Hall, we had
tons of it still recorded. What's that, sorry?
Before we had Kids in the Hall, we had
that's right.
Before SCTV,
yeah, the Frantics. That was Kids in the Hall before there was a Kids in the Hall. That was the franchise. Now I'm going to go listen to a bunch. I'm going to go down a rabbit hole here.
I can't wait for the upcoming episode of Sean Geek and Fast Fret where you talk about Four on the Floor and all the goodness of that show.
Oh, because Todd's a huge fan, so I'm marking that on our list. I'm doing it right now, and now we're going to talk about it. Maybe we'll you know what, that's the one we bring you on for. I was trying to find the perfect opportunity.
I wouldn't recommend it. I tank ratings, but maybe tell the folks while you're writing that down, Sean, tell them again about the Sean Geek Fast Fat podcast. Where can they find it and all that good stuff?
You can find it at, I don't have the sexy voice of my co-host, but it's at seanmcginity.ca. That's seanmcginity.ca because why, we're in Canada. And you can find our show there. It's released every Monday at 5 a.m. We do kind of additional episodes with Karen, which we've set the release schedules to be on Fridays, every second or third Friday. She comes on, she's our third on the show, and it's basically we have a topic board much like your wheel on that other show that you do, and we just randomly pick a topic off of there and just talk about it and just, I don't know, just chit chat.
It's great stuff. If you're looking for just a nice chill podcast to listen to some fun people just chatting about whatever, pill bottles was a topic at one point. All sorts of good stuff.
Batteries.
Batteries. Check out the Sean Geek Fast Ride podcast. John, you got anything you want to plug here tonight?
No, but I want to leave the listeners with some advice, if that's okay.
Of course.
The truth is, bro, life's about greasing the dewback, buddy, and wheezing the buffest man. High school was interesting, all right? It was kind of like a harsh ride. Uh-huh.
And with that, we will call it a night. On behalf of John Mariano and our special guest, Sean McGinnity, my name is Corey Morse. Thank you very much for listening. And we'll see you next time on Backtracks the Music.
Look at what we have here. Dairy Group. Milk Duds. You hide these under your pillow, bro, so your mom doesn't find them. If she does, you're tweaked, buddy. You keep on cruising. Fruit Group. Sweet Tarts. Oh. These are killer, buddy. So citrusy, dude, you'll freak. Keep on cruising. Hey, this is the Vegetable Group. Oh, corn nuts. Oh, put them on a pedestal, bro. Look at that. Yeah. Was it kill, huh? Meat Group. Come on. Make the Meat Group. These are my favorite. Oh. Hey, you gotta be equal. Equals. 50-50 here. Damn. Figures hot on the outside, icicle in the middle.
2 minutes.
But you like that, right? Because you're a caveman. Cool, buddy. The beverage. The icy, bro. This is what put this place on the map.
What are you doing, Mrs. Stoney? No, you can't do this. You can't do this here.
No, please.
Look, Kashmir Rajneesh, why don't you just chill?
No, but chill.
Link and I are cruising the mountain, bro, and we figure we's a little juice.
No, wheezing the juice.
Wheeze the juice.
No, wheezing the juice.
No,
we need
the juice!
Hey,
juice!
Chill, bud.
No, but chill.
No.